claws all around to keep, to help hold them together, I guess.
Keep warm?
Probably. And to stop any pain she might have in them. And she delighted in recalling the past, and I made a good listener.
How old were you then?
Well, it was before we moved to Idaho. I think I must have been in just around 13. And she would tell me all the story of her life from her home back in Ellisburg, Western New York.
Okay, Mom, you're going to tell us about what your grandmother Tracy told you.
Well, she told me about the coming of the Mormon elders to Ellisburg. It was not so long after the church was organized and the saints were at, that time were at Kirtland, and about joining the church, about her going, hearing that one of the apostles of the church was going to speak on a certain street corner there in Ellisburg by the name of David W. Patton. And how she got a cousin of hers and says, let's go and hear him speak. And she expected to see someone almost, well, not in human form because of the wild stories that had been told around about the Mormons. But to her amazement, she saw a tall, dark, handsome man get up on the square there in the town and began to speak. She said he hadn't talked very long before I knew he was a prophet of the Lord. The Spirit told me that he was a true messenger bringing the gospel to the people in that locality. And I could have went right down into the waters of baptism right then, for I knew that what he was speaking was the truth. And she later joined the church, and the elders were always welcome at her home. And finally she married Grandpa Tracy. She was very young, 16 or 18, I forget.
16.
And they got a wagon and a fine span of horses and went to Kirtland. And I have listened to her tell about their life in Kirtland and how wonderful it was to be able to go over to the temple over in Kirtland and listen to the prophet's voice. And she had a child, and she sometimes had to sit down at the end of the building, but how she thrilled at every word that he spoke. And she told me all these stories, and about going from Kirtland to Far West, about the persecutions there. They had a lovely home there, and they had to give that up, were driven out and went to Illinois. And about her life in Illinois, how their home was built up on the brow of the hill just across from where the temple was being built. And how she used to watch the workmen over there on the temple building it. And what a joyful experience it was for her to listen to the music of the trowel and that which they used in building the temple. And then about its completion. And she and... And then about the troubles that arose and the saints would have to leave Nauvoo the Beautiful. The prophet had been slain and his brother Hiram. And now it was to your tents again, O Israel, as she put it. And they had finished the temple and were able to go through the temple at Nauvoo and receive their endowments there, she and Grandfather Tracy. And then they got their wagon and their supplies and crossed the river and joined the other saints that had already gone before across the river at what was called
Winter Quarters.
And about the sufferings there and about crossing the plain and all the hardships. And when they reached Council Bluffs, my father was born. Helen Henry Tracy was born at Council Bluffs. And then continuing the journey on to Utah. Most of the families, or a good many of them, settled in Salt Lake City. Some went south and some went north. And they traveled till they came to the Weber River. And they looked around and decided this was the place where they would like to stay. So they settled here in what was then a wild country. There was Indians all about them. They went north to what was called Mound Fort. And they lived at Mound Fort for some time and then went west a mile and established their home on West 12th Street. Indians would come over there, and they were always kind to them. They played and wrestled with her boys.
How much land did they take in there?
I don't know how much land.
It was several acres.
Always more than that.
Maybe 10 or 12 acres. But
was it in the Broom Bench area?
Yes, it went back almost to the Ogden River, way back south from the home. And it was mostly meadowland, places for cattle to feed, or sloughs, and land that was not fit for anything much. Some of it was. But they planted crops, and grandfather passed away not long after, when the move south came, and the Saints were forced to leave their homes and go south on account of Johnson's army coming through. They came back, and grandfather went out and tried to sow a little wheat so they could have a little wheat or something for the coming winter, and he passed away just a few days after they had returned home after being going south on account of Johnson's army. He didn't live very long after that, and she was left a widow with a family of children.
He died in 1856.
He passed away in 1856, Grandfather Moses Tracy.
Well, do you remember any specific incidents that she told you about in her life that don't appear in that diary of hers?
I have to stop and think.
They knew the prophet personally, didn't they? The prophet Joseph Smith.
Oh, yes, yes, they knew him personally. Before they left Nauvoo, they were called on a mission to go back to New York State and go to the place where they had lived in and around Ellisburg and the country around there as missionaries. And the prophet came to the boat as they were going down the Mississippi to the Ohio River and then from the Ohio and on up into New York. He came to the boat to bid them farewell and to give them his blessing, which he did. And she states in her diary that that's the last they ever saw of their beloved prophet, because before they returned, he had been assassinated. And they preached to their relatives. They went out all among their kinsfolks and others and preached the gospel, but they were not successful. She said, we were made welcome. They loved to have us in their homes and treated us very nice, but they would not listen to the message which we had to give them. Let's see.
Do you remember your grandmother Tracy saying anything about her own mother? Or her own father?
Her mother's name was Alexander, of course. And her mother was Betsy Alexander. And grandmother said that her father died when she was young, and her mother went out to work. She had to go out to work to earn a living a great deal of the time. And Nancy was left alone, but she had a Bible, and she says her greatest pastime, the thing she loved to do, was to go out by herself under the shade of a tree and read the Bible. And she read it and she studied it. and believed in it. So she was always of a religious trend of mind.
She must have done this when she was quite a young girl.
Yes, she was a very young girl, but she joined the church when she was young, 16. But the Bible is the book that she read from the time she first learned to read. She read and studied the Bible, so her mind was prepared and susceptible to the true gospel when she heard it, because she believed just what she read in the Bible. She didn't try to change it in any way. The New Testament, she believed it just as it was written in the Bible.
Can you describe your grandmother Tracy as you knew her as a young girl? How tall was she and so on?
She was real tall and slender, taller than I am, and very slender. And of course,
how tall are you?
5'4".
5'4", well, I guess she'd be 5'6" or 5'8". I know she was taller than I, and she stood very erect. And she had a commanding appearance. Her voice was strong, and she meant what she said.
Was she stern or kind or?
Well, some people might think she was stern. That New England stock, you know, they're inclined to be that way. They're not gentle like the Southern people. They're a little different. And she seemed to have a stern way, but you could see beneath that sternness, and it didn't bother me any. I know one night, not long before she passed away, I was getting in an age where girls were starting to go out nights a little bit and go to some of the young folks' dances, and or having parties, going to parties. And I was stuck there every night with grandmother. But my half-sister was having a party, birthday party, one evening for some of her children, and she told me to come, and I went. Well, I left before the party was over, long before, and I had to walk down a stretch of railroad track in the dark, but I knew grandmother was there alone waiting for me, and I had never been away this late before. So I hurried down that railroad track as fast as I could tear in the dark. And when I opened the door, she says, "Well, Florence, where have you been?" in very stern tones. And I said, "I went to a party, Grandma." I was very conscience-stricken to think that I had neglected her. And she gave a big, deep sigh. She says, "Well, I guess the party was of more consequence than I am." In a trembling voice, like she'd been terribly neglected, and I just went to bed and felt so bad. I just cried. I felt so bad at the tone of her voice, and because I had neglected her. And I didn't do it again. And all the time I stayed with her, although I was the age when girls went to parties and things like that, I stayed with her every night. I remember a lady asking me about those things, or talking with me about staying with grandmother, and she says, "Now I see why you're such a serious temperament, living with that old lady so long like you did, not getting out and enjoying life."
How many years did you stay with your grandmother?
Oh, I suppose it was less than 2 years. It wasn't long, but it seems long, you know, to a young child. And then this one night that she had a cold and she coughed in the night, and I heard her. I heard that cough, and I jumped up and says, "What can I do for you, Grandmother?" Now, usually it's hard to wake a girl up at that age to sleep pretty sound. But she says, "I can't get rid of this phlegm in my throat. Hand me a spoonful of that jam in the corner of the cupboard." So I got a spoon and took some, and she swallowed a little at a time until she got that phlegm out of her throat and could breathe easily. Well, the next morning I told Mother about it. I says, "Grandmother had a cold and I had to get up in the night and give her something to clear her throat. So Mother went right over. And others of the family, Aunt Jane and Grandma Bickington and some of them came up. That evening, Mother came in and says, "Florence, you go to bed at home tonight. You're not to stay with Grandmother tonight." And then in the next morning, she came and woke me up and says, "Grandmother passed away during the night." So that's how near I come to being left alone with her when she passed away.
Now you were describing her. What color was her hair?
She had blue eyes and blonde. She was blonde complexion.
Of course she was old now. Was her hair blonde when she was younger?
I think so. Yeah, I think she'd always been blonde. Blue-eyed blonde. I didn't see any pictures of her except that last one with that little shawl that she made. She made herself a little silk shawl from silkworms. She raised the silkworms, and we children used to go pick mulberry leaves and bring to her to feed the silkworms. And they wove the silk, and she knitted a little shawl out of the silkworm threads. And one of her daughters had it in the had it the last I heard of it, but it was a family heirloom.
Do you think that's still in existence today?
Well, this aunt, her daughter, passed away. They've all gone now. And I don't know whether her great-grandchildren would take care of it or whether it's in the family or not. But
the daughter you're speaking of, the one who married the Moyes?
Yes. She lived in Salt Lake City, Noreen Moyes. I forget who she married, but she had it the last time I heard of it because her mother before her had it. And I don't know where it is, but in her photo she has that little knit shawl across her shoulders in fine silkworm silk.
Did she do other things to keep herself busy at that time, other than this knitting?
Well, she couldn't do much. She was weak. And I guess she sewed a little when her eyes would permit and her hands. But she usually just went about and did her little housework. I went over every Saturday and cleaned and scrubbed up the kitchen and cleaned the house for her every Saturday. And then she sat between her cupboard and her stove and did her own little cooking and washed her own dishes and made her own bed and tidied it up a little, but that's all she was able to do because she was quite old when she passed away. And she would have visitors call in and visit with her. Well, that's how she spent her time. She couldn't do much.
How about your grandfather, Tracy? Do you know anything about him that's not included in that short diary of Nancy Naomi?
Well, when Johnson's army came through.
He was a carpenter, Dad said.
Yes, he was a carpenter. And when Johnson's army came through, he was stationed up in Ogden City, or was it? Or Salt Lake, where Johnson's army came through, ready to set fire to the homes if they come in and try to take possession. He was one that did that.
Didn't he go south?
Oh, yes, they went south. That was it.
But he shunned David,
but
stayed.
That's right. They went south when Johnson's army threatened to enter the valley. And it was his son David that was left behind to put the torch to the homes if Johnson's army tried to come in and take possession, because the leaders of the church said, "They drove us from Nauvoo and other places. And if they come here and try to drive us out and take possession, they'll find nothing but blackened ruins." But the army marched through the town and spared it and camped west of the town, so it was not necessary to burn it. Now, as I said, Grandfather Tracy didn't live very long after they entered the valley. And there's very little written about his life, except the little that's in Grandmother's diary, about them being sent by the prophet, meeting them at the boat, and being sent back to New York State on a mission. And I know he had the faith, a strong testimony, and he made a good missionary. Now, that's about all we have about his life.
Was he dead before you were born?
Oh, yes.
You didn't ever know him?
Oh, no. You see, he died right after they entered the valley.
Mm-hmm.
They just got back there and settled down in their home. They'd only just got settled back from the move south.
Mm-hmm.
They went south in their wagon, and he got back. And she says it was late for planting, but he sowed a little wheat. He thought it might mature a little so they could have something to eat for winter. And then he took to his bed and he never got up again. So he died right after the move south. He, my father, wasn't even married then.
He built a house in Kirkland when they moved there. He built houses for others too.
And in Far West, he built a good many homes in Far West, and he helped to build the temples.
Apparently he was pretty good rustler and provider from what she says in her diary.
Yes, he was a worker, and he worked on the temples and meeting houses wherever the saints were, from Kirtland down to Far West and Nauvoo and to Utah. Of course, he didn't do much in Utah, but at those places he worked on the temples, and he built homes for the saints when they reached Missouri. Back before they arrived there, they had a couple that took sick on the way, and they stopped and built a home, a shelter for them, and stayed a few months before going on to Far West.
Well, how about your grandfather Tracy's father? Did you ever hear anything about him?
Well, Moses was the son of Caleb. And Caleb, my father met him when he went back on a mission at Western New York. And his
that would have
father,
been your father's grandfather?
Yes.
Your father's grandfather,
yes.
Tracy.
And his great-grandfather, Solomon, they lived up in northern part of the state of New York.
Well, they were still alive when your father went on a mission there, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, some of them were. Caleb was. That they moved down to Western New York from up in the northern part of the state. And Caleb was alive, and Father visited them, but there wasn't any of them that would accept the gospel. His mother's sister, Almina Tracy, I forget who she married, when he went on a mission there, she says, "Now, Helen, you're welcome to come and stay in our home. That I don't want to hear one word of religion." Now remember that. Not a word about your religion. I have no use for it and don't want to hear about it. But you can stay here. And so she was very good to give him his food and wash and iron his clothes. But some of his wearing apparel, he had to go down the creek and wash himself.
Mm-hmm.
But she was kind and good, and they all were his cousins. And all the relatives that he met on that mission were very kind to him and lovely. They wanted to dance with him and have a good time, but no religion. He was not to preach to them at all. So he wasn't able to bring any of them into the church on the Tracy line. He brought some of the Calvins that were back on his mother's line, I believe.
Well, now, how about your own life again? Do you remember any outings or trips to conference or anything like that were real enjoyable?
Well, the first time I ever went to conference in Salt Lake City, I never shall forget it. I was working in the YLMIA in the Iona Ward, and the president said, "We should be represented at conference at the MIA conference in Salt Lake, but I can't go. I've got a family, and you seem to be the only one that's free that could go. Now, whoever goes, their transportation is to be paid from the organization funds. And she said, could I go? I told her, yes, I'd be glad to. So they paid my fare, and I got ready and went down.
How old were you at this time?
I was around 18. And I shall never forget walking from the station. I can remember the directions then. But I was on South Main Street. And when we got, or on Main Street. And when walking up, we got to the, within a block of the temple, I caught sight of the spires of the temple. And I stopped right short there and went over under the eaves of the CCMI and stood gazing at that temple. Now there's something that I don't know whether this should be mentioned or not here, but I had a boyfriend in Iona that wanted to marry me, but he wouldn't go through the temple. I told him I'd never get married outside the temple. He had been on a mission and been through the temple. But apparently he had lost the faith to a certain extent, and he thought it was too much bother to come away to Salt Lake to get married when you could get married in Idaho Falls.
What was his name?
Tom Lee. Thomas Lee.
Was
his sister was president of the YLMIA. And I told him, no. It's been my ambition to go through that temple, and I'll never get married anywhere else. Well, he tried every way to get me to change my mind. He started going out with other girls and flirting around right under my nose, thinking I'd get jealous and give in, but he didn't know me very well. Well, I stood there, stock still, when I saw that temple. And lo and behold, he'd been following me, and I didn't know it. He'd gone to conference too, see, representing the young men's.
Uh-huh.
He was active in the church, but when he got in Idaho Falls, he was a musician and played in the orchestra. He forgot church and everything. He wasn't a very good boy. And he come upside of me, saw me looking at that temple, and I guess my face was all in raptures, because you can't look at that temple without feeling something. He looked at me and dropped his head. He knew what I was thinking. I'm mighty darn thankful that I didn't get married outside of that house. When I get married, that's where I'm going to be married. I had the inspiration of that, what was inside that building all along, and I wanted to be sealed for time and eternity to a husband and children there. But those are the things you have to meet in life. And he should have known better, because he'd been on a mission and was active in the church. Now, was there anything else?
Well, just what broke up the rest of that?
Well, the result is that he went somewhere else and got him a girl, and she would marry him outside the temple. And she was a sister of a president of the state, too. Well, the next I heard of that fellow, he got in World War
One.
And was stationed in San Diego, California. And I just happened to pick up a newspaper one day, and there his name was listed among the dead.
Hmm.
He died there of the flu epidemic. And he left a wife and one child. And they lived up the country quite a ways from Idaho Falls. I don't even remember who they are.
How did you enjoy, this was an MIA conference, or was this a regular conference?
This was MIA conference.
June conference?
Boy, I'll never forget how I sat and drank in every word of that conference. And I took notes of every bit of it. Oh, it was just something I'd never heard before. I'd never been to a conference before. And Joseph F. Smith's wife was a speaker that I enjoyed so much. What was her name? Oh, I've forgotten her name now. He had several wives, but this one in particular gave the most wonderful sermon. And everything seemed to fit in with what I believed and what I had done. about marrying in the church and marrying in the temple and all that, you know. It was just seemed like it was meant for me. Just think, I wouldn't have had you and my five boys if I'd taken that step.
No, I'm glad you married Pop instead of that guy.
He was a smart aleck. He thought that every girl on earth that just fell right in love with him at one look, because he had a way with him, you know. But he sure, I was afraid, a little bit afraid, I might be tempted. So they were having an MIA dance over in Ireland, and we lived over at Ben's 3 miles away. And I decided I wouldn't go. And Blanche went. And I decided to come back down to Ogden. Get away from them. I didn't like Idaho anyway. There's nothing I liked about up there much. So I packed my things and was going the next day. And Blanche went to the dance, and he came up and said, "Where's Florence?" "Oh, she's home packing." "What's she packing for?" "Oh, she's going to Ogden tomorrow." He says, "Tell her not to go. Tell her I want to see her first."